On Wednesday, November 9th, and then for a good couple weeks after, my phone would not stop ringing. Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, NPR, I had lost track of who had asked for money, who I had given money to. My discernment over who needed it more, it was urgent, panicked, and overwhelming. Anyone else remember November 9th? I've been thinking about this Sunday since that Wednesday. Moving through the reality that congregational life feels different this winter than any other I've ministered in, both more important and less planned. But also gone are the days in which we can be loose about our mission in and to the world, about what participation looks like and how a public theology sounds. And perhaps specific today, gone are the days in which I get to pat us on the back for a growing membership, for giving our children sound and holistic religious education, and for engagement within our sanctuary walls, as a way of convincing you that this place deserves the practical and necessary, and sometimes more than we thought we could or that we would, give gift of your money. It's a whole new ball game, isn't it? This period in which we find ourselves. The late poet John O'Donohue writes of this in a way that feels familiar, and I hope will already feel familiar to you based on the morning that we've had. He says, if you go back to the etymology of the word threshold, it comes from threshing, which is to separate the grain from the husk. So the threshold, in a way, is a place where you move into more critical and challenging and worthy fullness. There are huge thresholds in every life, he says. You know that, for instance, if you are in the middle of your life in a busy evening, 50 things to do, and you get a phone call that somebody you love is suddenly dying, it takes 10 seconds to communicate that information. But when you put the phone down, you are already standing in a different world. Suddenly, everything that seemed so important before is all gone, and now you are thinking of this. So the given world that we think is there and the solid ground we are on is so tentative, and a threshold is a line which separates two territories of the spirit. And very often, this is my favorite part, how we cross is the key thing. Each year we come to this Sunday, Stewardship Sunday, in which we kick off our campaign, and it begins in some of the same awkward ways. Curious and reluctant, pre-offended, or at least pre-protective. We can't help but recall how in the pre-reformed Catholic Church, congregants had to pay for one's sins to be dissolved. And if it isn't the history of religious institutions requesting you to dig deep that makes you shift in your chairs, then it may be how money and conversations about money are also always conversations about power and choice, feelings of abundance and scarcity. And if somehow you're still good with all of that, you've worked out your religious past, you're okay with the power stuff and abundance or scarcity, today might be a little awkward because our emotional responses are not born of a vacuum, but are intrinsically linked to what we were taught. Not what we learn now, but what we were taught. Money, food, discipline, it's all the same, and all welcomes a similar squirmy feeling that we don't really welcome into our Sunday morning experience. But despite that litany of why this conversation is hard, why it's uncomfortable, or at the very least resisted by some, this congregation in my short tenure has continuously made it a time of joy and a proud showing up. We are practiced at talking about things that are awkward, things that bring up questions of worth, stereotypes, divisions between us and others, divisions within ourselves on a weekly basis, and not just through money, but because we are humans and the spirit is often in tension with itself. And it is the work of congregational life not just to honor that tension, but to help one another live authentically and well within it. So maybe it shouldn't be so surprising that in the last few years, we haven't gotten stuck, but rather we have grown because of our ability to have the money talk. We've seen the fruits of our generosity, programming like beloved conversations that have changed our habits. Our speech has thrown open assumptions into questions and created new spaces like the People of Color group. We've grown our staff so that we can enjoy fellowship hour, let alone have someone who knows how to use the chairlift, which might seem boring and practical, but is one of the most spiritually responsible things we could have done in the last 2 years. We give to organizations that don't have the staff to make phone calls before or after elections. We can pay someone like Erin, who can move us from singing our children to their classrooms onto the holy ground of prayer and meditation with ease. In the last few years, we have said yes to this place in big and important and responsible ways, and it has undoubtedly allowed us to live more fully into who and how we want to be. But this year, I try so hard to never use the word but this year, I want us to be clear. The ground we walk is tentative, and the threshold, the doorway between pride in who we are, in maintenance of making this place work for the sake of this place and this people, and the pride in how we can change the world is right in front of us. A rabbi named Rami Shapiro has this poem that I keep coming across. It says, "We are loved by an unending love. We are embraced by arms that find us even when we are hidden from ourselves. We are touched by fingers that soothe us even when we are too proud for soothing. We are counseled by voices that guide us even when we are too embittered to hear. We are loved by an unending love. We are supported by hands that uplift us even in the midst of a fall. We are urged on by eyes that meet us even when we are too weak for meeting. We are loved by an unending love, embraced, touched, soothed, and counseled. Ours are the arms, the fingers, the voices. Ours are the hands, the eyes, the smiles. We are loved by an unending love. Ours are the arms, the fingers, the voices," he reminds us. In years past, I've reminded us that it is no bishop or pope that decides who keeps our doors open or who your minister is, but each of us who cooperatively make decisions and keep the lights on. That has become easy and simple congregationalism, small universalism. We live now in the charge, the burden, the opportunity, and the invitation to remember that in our faith there is also no promised parental being that will ensure that love or justice will find its way in the world. Only our arms, our fingers, our voices, and absent in that prayer is our resources that often, for better or worse, make having our voices heard possible. I think so often of the Sunday, the day after the Women's March, how so many came through the line, some crying, others tired but proud. You brought your daughters with you for the first time, or you yourself carried a sign that spoke your values that you had otherwise kept tucked away in intimate friendships. And I think of the conversation with a Pillar member who told me recently how his vacation was different this time. Having taken beloved conversations, he saw people who are skilled at being invisible, lest they interrupt the ocean views. He saw people and asked for their stories. He listened and wanted to know more. And then there's the Religion and Life alumna, girls from 10 to 16, who just the other day told me a story I hadn't ever heard, stories of a woman minister who applied to serve here in the 1930s when we didn't have a minister, when we thought we were going to fold because we couldn't find somebody to serve this space. In the archives, we have the numerous documents telling us how she applied, and the only response being the numerous ways in which the search committee asked male clergy to apply. Those girls hold that history of our congregation, hold us accountable to who we were and who we say we are, mark our growth, but not without honest reflection for how far we've still yet to go. Think of the ways in which congregational life, this space, has served those generations just in the last year. Giving financially to this place, to this people, has never been for one purpose. Singularly focused institutions are necessary. The ACLU is essential, as is, in my life at least, NPR. But when we pool our gifts here, we are building something much larger, more sustainable and deep. We are equipping hundreds of adults and children to go out into the world bravely, but also with tenderness. We are learning how to express our power by showing our grief. We are leading by asking questions. And throughout it all, we are learning to love and be loved in a time in which the world is weeping with hate. I am so proud of what this place is, who this place is. And we must make some decisions about why we are here, and more important still, how the world will know us by more than our intentions or principles. With a ministerial resident next church year, our presence in Trenton has the possibility of growing in other organizations, at the State House, throughout our communities. If we fund religious education with more intention, we get to offer professional and safe childcare for parents who deserve to be a part of congregational life. Relying less on our fundraising and more on individual pledges allows us to give more to smaller organizations when we do raise significant funds at the auction and the like, let alone lift that burden from our auction planners. We have got the heart and hands and voices. There is no doubt about that. We are growing in our resources. And if we continue to do so, we can grow our power, our impact, and our purpose in the world. If it isn't now, if this isn't the time to stretch in your generosity, I can't fathom when is. Each year, the title of the sermon is the same, Sermon on the Mount. And I'm guessing some of you read quickly Mount and are surprised in this exchange right now. But I take that title seriously. It's only fair to explain what we mean when we are asking for gifts of this nature. So here's the last piece, and Lou's going to talk about this more in a few minutes too, but if we're looking to maintain and could evenly spread out the cost of building and salaries, utilities, and the like, we'd ask for a pledge of around $2,100 per household. But as we know, 10% of this cooperative community, of this faith home, is in financial hardship. $2,000 or anything above that, or even anything close to it, is just not possible for some of our folks. It is also significantly less than what others can and do give. As we've spoken about before, I've shared here that Tara and I can't look at that number. It looks a little overwhelming for young parents still paying off college debt and trying to figure out new home payments. So instead, we work off of a percentage. In the past, stewardship committee, finance, other leadership, and I have encouraged you to give 2.5% when considering your pledge. This year, I'm going to challenge each of us to consider 2.5% to 5%. Because it's no longer about maintaining. You have chosen this place. You've chosen to build it beam by beam, story by story, strangers made into family, safety made into bravery. I believe we are ready to show the world what that means. The threshold, in a way, is a place where you move into more critical and challenging and worthy fullness. It is a line which separates two territories of the spirit, and very often, how we cross is the key thing. May we cross with pride, generosity, and more than good intentions. May it be so, and blessed be.